All right, so today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Yud Zayin. Start at the fourth line on Yud Zayin. Om Reb Yochanan v'chulom lipsu. So all of these cases in these cities that we spoke about, whenever we mention those cities, they are all for posel. Now let's get back to the discussion that we were in the middle of. The middle of the discussion about Rav Asi. So the Shaila was, why are this idea of that we're going to be worried about the Aseres HaShvatim and so on, what would be the problem of somebody coming along and accepting the Gerim or something with the Chashash of what it is that is the person Jewish or not Jewish, maybe he is a Jew, all of this was sort of left open. And Rav Yehuda said, when I came after Rav Asi was nifter, I came to learn by Shmuel. And Shmuel said to me, you're off the wall. This doesn't make any sense. Why are you saying that if a goy comes from a place where we have the Aseres HaShvatim, he might be a Jew, although he must be a mamzer, and the actual Kedushin is a Suffolk Kedushin because maybe he's Jewish. It's not true. Because the halacha is, the bincha haba min ha-Yisraelit korui bincha, the ein bincha haba min ha-Ovedet kochavim korui bincha ela bina. Now, this is one of the most important halachas l'maisa in terms of determining the relationship to Yisrael of a child of a mixed marriage. We're using the word marriage the way the goyim use marriage. So over there we have the pasuk telling us, lo titchaten ba. So we have an iser of marrying into them, and the pasuk explains itself for some reason. It says over there, bitcha lo titen livno, and bito lo tikach levanecha. And then it says, so either way, right? But then it says, ki yasir et bincha me'acharai, because he, that is to say the goy, will turn aside your son, that is to say your grandson, it's considered to be your son, the avdu Elohim acherim. So first we start talking about the case either where your daughter is given to a goy, and then we talk about the case where you took their daughter for your son. But the only one that we're makbid on in the pasuk to explain is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, you have to be careful because the father is going to turn your son aside. So that means that if the mother was Jewish, and this was a goyisha, a married from the goy to your daughter, that goy will turn your son aside from Avedas Hashem. And that would mean that's the only case that we need to worry about turning aside your son. Because in the other case, where the mother was not Jewish, doesn't say anything about what happens to your son. Why is that? Because you don't have a son. Because any son, that is to say, any grandchild that would have come from that union would not have been Jewish. So you see from there clearly, says Shmuel, that why would we need to worry about the Aseres HaShvatim, since only for some weird reason, which we're going to be talking about in a moment, but since only under the circumstances where the males would have mated with the goyim, the female goyim, would we have had any children, but those offspring wouldn't have been Jewish. So why are you worried about a Suffolk Kedushin? So there's no issue. What do you mean there's no issue? Last I heard, there were two sexes. I mean, what happened to the daughters of the Aseres HaShvatim? Why is there no issue? What about the banot? And that would mean that we're full of all kinds of offspring of those banot that were exiled to all of these cities that we had listed, even though they're kulam lipsul and so on. But we know where these places are. We know where some of these places are. And why aren't we choshesh for the daughters that mixed with the goyim? And if you hold that a goy that was ba'al eshes al Yisraelit is considered to be a mamzer, so then they remain Jewish, even though they're mamzerim. Why did Shmuel simply ignore that? Omer Ravina, you see an amazing thing from here. You see that Shmuel is taking for granted that they're first of all, you see, that ben bin bitcha haba min ha'oved kochavim korui bimcha, so that would mean that the people that had children, first of all, it would only be, as we see from here, that your daughter's son is Karui Pincha, and it must be that Gemiri Divinata Dahudara Itztaruya Itztaru. So even though we just said that the Bonais, we see from Shmuel that the Bonais are considered to be Jewish, but we have a Gemara, a tradition, that the Bonais of the Aseres Hashvatim were actually unable to have children. And because there's a number of different approaches, why were there some say that they actually sterilized themselves because they knew that they were going to be raped and they didn't want to have children from these goyim. So there were shots of kos shel ikrin. And boy, if somebody could discover what that kos shel ikrin today is, he would make millions, right? So this is a good opportunity for, well, maybe Gershon could, Cape Town's not around this, but as I told you, when I bumped into that witch doctor over there in Kenya in the old days, they had kos shel ikrin. They didn't think anything of it. It was so obvious. I should have asked the guy for the recipe, but he probably wouldn't have given it to me. No, it's mamash an amazing thing, because the Messiah, if they don't stand up during Bris Mila, so that's their puberty ceremony. So they have to be able to balance water on their head when you're giving them I shouldn't call it a Bris Mila, when you're circumcising them, right? So if they flinch, they drop the water. But the din is that if they flinch, then they don't have a right to marry. Obviously, this is the way in which you're a real man, is you can be circumcised and not flinch, right? So I asked the guy, I don't understand. So you're telling me that these guys never have relationships with women? I mean, what do? No, we go out in the field, you know, and we have our women there. So I said this, so what do you do about pregnancy? I mean, everybody's going to find out. No, we go to the witch doctor, and he gives her something to drink. I think it gives him something to drink, actually. It was even more Bella. And they never get pregnant because he's got this thing. So I should have asked him. Oh, well, you can see the millions flying away like a Donald Duck. Anyway, so getting back to the story over here. So this is one approach, that they actually sterilized themselves with kos shel ikrin because they didn't want to get pregnant. Others learn that it was stam because of the tsar, what they went through, and that it just caused such hormonal destruction that they never got back their fertility. And others learned that they were actually, because of these multiple rapes, they ended up with so much venereal disease and so on, that it destroyed their fertility. But whatever the thing is, we don't have to be choshesh for the children of the women of the Aseres HaShvatim, because they were not fertile by the time they had gotten to these places. And because of that, we don't have to worry about the goyim that raped them. But we do have to worry about the men. So that's what Rav Asi was saying. I'm worried about the men, because according to me, it would be Jewish. Said Shmuel to Rabbi Yehuda, was quoting Rav Asi, there's no such halacha, because the din is that the men, Jewish men that had impregnated female goyim, the children are not Jewish anyway. So there's no basis to be cheshish for kedushin. So therefore he argues, this is one approach of what Shmuel said. Now, the other approach was Ikari Amid. Rabbi Yehuda said, when I came along, I told Shmuel what it was that Rabbi Asi said. Shmuel said to me, and this is an amazing halacha, which is that the final step that I mentioned to you yesterday, we're going to get to today, that Shmuel actually said, Lo zazumisham acha asa'um ovdei kochavim gimurim. And that means that they were at that time, that the Aseres HaShvatim were Goloi, and they went ahead and they married Goyim, and they assimilated. Those people who had assimilated were declared to be Goyim. Oh, I mean, how can you declare people to be Goyim? And the truth is, as the Mefarshim point out, there is actually a more recent example of such a thing. Because what we did, Lagabi the Kutim, it says, Lo Zazur Bisham. So the same thing is said, but Lagabi Rabbi Meir and so on, that they were gozer on them to be goyim l'kol davar, right? So what in the world that would mean? How exactly could you could you make such a gezeira that there were goyim l'kol dovar? So you see from there, there's a lot of discussion about how this would work. Is that a unique halacha that was said al pi neviim? Because at that time we still had neviim. That was the goletz of the aseres hashvatim. Is it a general din, or is it only a special halacha about the aseres hashvatim and not a standard halacha that if a Jew goes out and he becomes like a goy, that he should have a din of a goy? So, enochinami, there are those who hold, surprisingly, that anybody that goes out to completely throw off his Judaism is excluded from the Am Hashem, and there are those that claim that they have a din of a goy gomor. There's the Shilas for Tshuvas Marashtam, when the Rebbeisha brings this, and the Meiri brings it, and there's some of the Ge'enim that brings this. Rebbeisha ends up saying that you're not allowed to be semech on this, even as a sniff for paskin. In other words, even if it adds one additional reason to be makel in a particular place, and you want to try to get somebody out of a marriage situation and so on, and you have other things that you could be mitzaref, he says that the das of all of the peskim kimat throughout history was to reject this shitas hagoyim and the marashna. So because of that, so we don't take that into consideration. But the point is that how could such a thing be? There's an amazing Chassam Sefer. Now, some learned that this was only done because they had Nevi'im, and the Nevi'im, this was Al-Pi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Giloy, that he doesn't view them as Bonav anymore, and so on. The Chassam Sefer says, look, this is his Lashon, Nir Lefi Ani Yazdaiti Sheyesh Koach B'chlal Yisrael Lohotzi HaMordim Michlal HaUma V'yachzeru L'goyim Gemurim Af LaHakel. V'zecher l'davar ra'a v'yater goyim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does this with the goyim. Sheitir lehem sheva mitzvahs. Obviously, you can't bring a raya from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but mikol makom came nearly. V'heim nimnu v'gomru lohotzi'em mi'brit Yisrael legamre. What an idea. And he says that this is what we find in Ezra, which was a pasuk that we have analyzed several times. Yehoram korechusho v'hu yibadel mikahal agola. What is yibadel mikahal agola? Most people understand kipshutai, that we're putting him into cherem and that we're not going to have anything to do with him. The Chassam Sefer suggests that yibadel mikahal agola is like a chorus. We're cutting him out of Klal Yisrael. Whoa. So if what we were talking about yesterday was the way that we have the genealogical mamzerus, the question is, can we have also a memeological ultimate mamzer? So in other words, there comes a point at which something is cut out completely from the idea of being a member of Yisrael. And remember how many times we've spoken, I think I even wrote about it in Frameworks, the question of toldos and the relationship of the idea of memetics to genetics, and what is the nature of those that are considered, like the Rambam defines in Kabe Bris Milo, who is considered to be Zera Avram? And what does it mean to say, Bi Yitzchak Yikare Lecha Zera? I mean, what does that mean? If it isn't genealogically different, it's exactly the same Zera. And on the one hand, we call Esav, the Gemara Kedushin calls B'nai Esav Yisrael Mumer, which is exactly the Nekudah over here. Nobody says that we should be Chayish LeKedushin from an Agoy that comes from Esav. So in other words, there's this concept of Bris Yisrael that the Chassam Sofer is speaking about, and that it is actually possible for a person to lose his connection to that Bris Yisrael to the point where his Kedushin isn't even considered to be a Kedushin. Oh my God, that's like unbelievable. So, okay, if that could be the pshat. And as I said, Halacha L'maisa, Reb Moshe says not to use this even as a part of your chashivas of the inyan, but nonetheless, it's a beautiful end to a perek that is discussing this entire idea of the ongoing evolution and the point at which you reach speciation, as Ira mentioned yesterday. This is the speciation that I told you we're going to be getting to, that it's mamish speciation. At this point, it's no longer considered to be part of Yisrael. And it's as if, literally, you don't have to be chayish l'kedushin. And that would be the meaning of lo zozer misham, nothing to do with genetics. It's not that there weren't such people. There were plenty of bonos that had children. But nonetheless, the situation of the assimilation was such that they're no longer Jewish. Incredible. Where do we see this? Shenemar. Bahashem bagadu ki banim zarim yaladu. They gave birth to aliens. So that means that it was alien to the bris. It's therefore that is speciation. Mamish dat nakuda, alien children. Amazing idea. Absolutely amazing idea. Whew. Okay. Anyway, so getting back to Talmud. So Rav Yosef was sitting behind Rav Kahana, and Rav Kahana was sitting in front of Rav Yehuda, and he was saying that it's not clear what this is, who was saying, but somebody was saying, maybe Rav Yehuda, maybe Rav Kahana, but somebody was saying that Atidim Yisrael, the Ave Yumatava, Kicharve Talmud, when we finally get rid of Talmud and it's destroyed and wiped out with a nuclear bomb, the Klal Yisrael is going to make a celebration. Says the Gemara, what are you talking about? It's already been destroyed. What are you saying? Okay, Barnea, give us the historical background of Talmud. Go for it.
It's assumed to be Tadmor. I'm about to post something. It's assumed to be Tadmor and from the time of Shlomo, and it's really complicated. There's a lot on it, and we had Tzores. I read it yesterday. I'll post it for everybody. Right.
Okay.
And the other one, Karyovim, might be, help me, from Ararat, Kurdistan, right, from people in that area.
Do you know what it means that it was already Chorov, will be Chorov? Do you have any idea what it's referring to?
It discusses it, and I don't remember. I don't have
it. Okay, all right. So post it. We'll take a look. Okay, so wasn't it destroyed already? No. You're always getting mixed up. That was Talmud, not Talmud. So all of these daffim are like with these confusions of names, you know? Okay, Rebbe, this should be a lesson to the archaeologist that Barnea hangs around, you know? Is it the same thing? Yeah, it sounds the same. Sorry. Rav Ashi Omar, Hainu Talmud, Hainu Talmud. It's not true. Those are the same places. The thing is that wiping out Talmud is like trying to wipe out cockroaches. What happens is if you get rid of one nest, they move to another place and they come out on the other side. Maybe one of them was called Talmud, one of them's called Talmud. It's the same nest. So they keep reproducing themselves. So if you destroy them on one side, they go and they reproduce on the other side. So it's very difficult. We finally bomb the whole thing and there's nothing left, then we'll make a yantav. Anyway, Rav Amnuna was sitting learning by Ula, and he was mamish, he was asking him tremendous kashas, and wow. So Ula says, what a man, what a guy, this is amazing. What a shame he comes from Harpania. If only he hadn't come from Harpania, I would say, now this is a shidduch to go for. So then he saw he was very embarrassed. Rav Amnuna was about, because I mean, to say you come from Arpania is basically saying like you're a monster or something. So he was very embarrassed. So Ula felt bad. So he says, one second, question, where do you pay taxes? Do you pay your city tax to Arpania? No, he says, I paid to Pumnara. Oh, so then for sure you're not from our pocket. So then you're from Pumnara. I take it back. So it's a good shidduch after all. Anyway, why do we call this town Harpania? Amar Rabbi Zera, well, that's because that's the mountain, the Har, Shakol Ponimbo. It's where anybody who's got a problem and can't find a shidduch because they think he's a mamzer or he's a pogrom or whatever, that's where to go to get a shidduch, you know? So, b'masnisatana, Harpania is kosher in omakir mishpachto v'shifto nifne l'sham. So that's dumb that they have, if you don't know where you belong, because you have no genealogy, it's like you appeared suddenly from nowhere. Who knows? Better just go live in Harpania. Oh, my brother. Now, you should know, Harpania goes even deeper than hell itself. So be careful that you got a parachute. Meaning, you can always get out of hell, but you can never get out of Harpania. because no, this is serious. Because once you have this begam mishpacha, as we say, Elio is not going to come to be metayer the psulim. So how are you ever going to get out of this mess? If you go to hell, so then b'meshach hazman, you know, 12 months, whatever, at least you can get out. Or according to the Ramchal, if you're a Kovei Hashem, you could just fly straight out of hell anyway. So anyway, they can't keep you down there. But what are you going to do about being in Harpanya? That you can't get out of. So Amuka Misha'ol. Because when it comes to Sha'ol, it says, Miyad Sha'ol Evdeim. Mimoveh Segalim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I will take them out of Sha'ol. I can save them from death. But what am I supposed to do about a Psul Mamzerus? Psul, do you do less late the content? There's nothing to do. So, getting back to yesterday's daf. So yesterday's daf, we said that what was the problem of the people in Talmud? The problem was Avdei Shlomo. And Avdei Shlomo, they were Avodim that were boim al Bnos Yisrael. And the halacha is that an Eved, according to that Mandiomer, the child is a Mamzer. But the thing is that we have all of these other cities in Bavel that we also say are psul mamzeres. Do we hold that all of this comes from the original Avdei Shlomo? No. Actually, psulei d'Harpanya, Harpanya comes from the original settlement in Meishan. Meishan, the Gemara says in other places that Meishan is like all mamzerim. And since Harpanya was a suburb of Meishan, so because of that, the mamzeres spread from Meishan to Harpanya. But the Meishan comes from the original settlement in Talmud. And Talmud had the problem because of Avdei Shlomo. And that's what people always talk about when they say, they want to talk about these kind of psulim, that, you know, the Kaaba Rabba and the Kaaba Zuta, the big basket and the little basket, they are Migander V'Azir Lisha'ol. They will roll down a hill if you let them roll down a hill. So what they keep on rolling, they'll get to hell eventually. And if you keep them rolling from hell, they'll finally get to Talmud. And then from Talmud, they spread. So they go to Meishan. And from Meishan, they go to Harpanya. So that actually concludes our perek about the genealogical issues and the mimeological issues. And Hadron ala Chameshes Reinashim, and a word from our Kapitan. Now, maybe before we do the Helika Perek beginning, we could take a few minutes. I sent you out a document which has the sikum, basically, of the Dapim here in the first Perek, so that you can see that actually it is structured and easily remembered. So that when we start off, if you want to open that, it's in your DAF. I sent it as a PDF, so you can open. We just review, since our captain said that we're supposed to review, let's review the Perek. Okay, so we started with our Mishnah, listing the 15 women on Amud Aleph. And then we started questioning what's the Seder of the Mishnah about. Questioning maybe it's Chumre, the relationship of Sreifa to, again, these are the side points, but Chumre would mean that you'd have to determine whether Sreifa is Chomer or whether the Skila is Chomer, because the Mishnah was talking about Sreifa. And that spoke about the Chamoto, and we learning it out from Chamoto. And then we tried the idea that the Bito comes because of the Chavivas, and anything that comes from a Drasha is Chaviv. We finally arrived at the clarity that the Mishnah is simply going in order of closest genealogy in terms of direct descendants or going upwards, going up so that the Isha of the Ima is the same as Isha Bita. And then we got to the question of when it says that the Chamesh Esrei Nashim, the idea, the difference between Potrot Sorotehem, what exactly would that be? Isn't it Osrot Sorotehem? And we talk about the idea of a Tzorot B'Makom Mitzvah. And then on Gimel Amid Beis, we start getting into the question of why did it say specifically Chamesh Esrei Nashim, it counted it, and it says Hare Elu, to stress again that it's 15. What exactly would those 15 be Mamayit? And that's where we introduced the idea of the four cases that we're going to be getting to eventually, of the Tzoras Mima'enes and the Tzoras Islandes and the Ma'aseh Grushasai and the Tzoras Seita, and then we take a break. Now, the truth is that this break, at the end of the break, we're going to get right back to this question. So that the reason that we take the break is because it's important for us to understand what the mocker is of this tour of Tzoras and Tzoras Tzoras in order to figure out indeed the answer to this question. So in a sense, the next part is, we can view it as sort of a pop down that goes from Daf Dalet all the way through Daf Tet. But as we explained, it has a deeper connection. The deeper connection is that it represents the Chamesh Esrei Nashim in terms of the difference of the Limudim that the Gemara introduces, which are Limudim are mimetic children of a halacha. So because of that, when we go into Smuchim and Kal V'chomer and Amamet Sinu and Gzeira Shava and a Hekesh and Dover Shaya Bichlal and Dover Shiyotza Minaklal and the concept of Holy Ishtri Ishtri, all of these in Yonim end up, even in the next section, with Ein Mikra Yotzi Midei Pshuto as part of that understanding. So we have the Pshutai, and that is the nakedness, which is mamish the lashon of erva, hafshata, means to take off your clothes, right? So when something is mufshat, it becomes abstracted. It's the basic idea, it is naked, which is the idea of legalot ervata, in a sense, in terms of understanding where something comes from. And then you go into these limudim. So we started off with Andav Dalet Esidur Chaloisasa. That got us into Smuchim and Rabbi Yehuda. And is there a difference between anything in Dvorim and in other Chumashim? And when can you be Darish Smuchim according to him? And the difference between a Mufna or something being Mukhrach. And then we got, because of that, the Smichas of Kalayim Betzitzes. And we got into the question of how do we understand Semru Pishtim? Are all begotten Semru Pishtim, the Limud of Rabbi Yishmael? What do we do with Knaf, Min Knaf? And then we move on Daf Hey to use instead of this idea, the Esedokolosas, which we're looking for. Maybe we could learn it out of the Giluach of a Mitzera, because you're going to be Doichelok Takifu, or you're going to be Doichel Isser of Lotashchit Pat Zakat, or you're going to be Doichel Isser of a Nazir shaving. Anyway, we ended up not being able to learn it out from there. Then we took a look at the Loshen of Sha'atnez. And finally, we said, but we still don't seem to have a marker for Lota Sashieshpo Karet. So we moved on Davov to start talking about Kivud Av Eim being Deuche and Isser Dioraisa. And we assume that if he tells you to be Mechala Shabbos, it didn't just mean to be Mechala Shabbos by sending something on an animal's back, which would only been Mechamer. He seems to be telling you to make a mistake on Shabbos. And then we said, maybe not, maybe so can't run from there. Then we got into the Mishkan and why the Binyan Mishkan is not Dercha Shabbos, and the way the Torah compares on Vav Amid Beis, that the Mikdash Shit Tirov and Shabto Tai Tishmoro and Kuchem are Chayavim Bichvodi, or whether we need Moshvot Techem to Aser Ritzicha B'Shabbos, which would mean that generally speaking, we would have been Matir. Is there, in fact, a model for Eser Dercha Losses HaShish Bokor Sudafka? Not. And then we went into various other possibilities. Maybe we learn it out from the Kal V'chomer. And maybe we learn it out from a Dover Shaya Bechlal L'Lameid, and therefore we actually learn out from Yibah, which we said is just the opposite. I mean, it's not, if anything, it's a Dover Shiyotze Minaklal L'Lameid, sorry, that's a Dover Shiyotze Minaklal Iyatamach Ziro L'Klalo. And then we discussed, maybe we could just learn it out from a Mamatzino. How could we do that if it's different, if it's two Isurim? So then we introduced the concept of Harov Ishtiri Ishtiri. And we brought a riot from Yehoshaphat with the Chatzera Chadasha. And then we asked, well, what about according to Ula, if somebody was Roa Keri on the day that he's supposed to be bringing his Karbonas as a Mitzera, and he's going to be sticking in his toesies into the Azora, so then we're also going to be Matir, his being Machnis, the same toesies has a Baal Keri that had gone to the mikveh, and he is usher to do that because he's a Tvul Yom. And there we came up with this idea of Hov Ishtri Ishtri, that was Ula, not everybody held of that. And then finally on Dav Ches, we came to the question of Hekesh of the Reb Yonah and the Dinim, how to use that Hekesh of all of the Arayas one to another. On Ches Amud Beis, we changed gears entirely, said maybe there's a completely different Limud than that was Rebbe's Limud. And then we had to explain, so what does Rebbe do with the Aleha? And we went through all of the karbonas that Aleha becomes a Gzeirah Shava to teach me how every single different type of chatas, whether it's chatas yochid, chatas nasi, chatas hatzibur, chatas of the parakoin hamashiach, chatas by Averes Kechavim, or chatas regular, all of the chatos we learned out from Aleha to be Mechayev only if they are on a key of chorus. Okay, so then we get back to the question. Why does it only say 15 women? That was, what is it coming to stress? And what is it coming to exclude? So we might as well ask it in a broader sense. Why are there only 15 women? How about all these other cases? Which, of course, is the same thing in the inverse. So Levi tells Rebbe, and in the end, he actually insists on listing 16 women. Because what happened to Imo? Since we have that problem of the machlokas between Reb Yehuda and the Rabbanan about whether anusas aviv is usher. If you hold anusas aviv is not usher like the Rabbanan, then your mother could fall to you for yibam. I mean, very simple, straightforward case. And Rebbe says he doesn't have a brain in his head. And we then struggle to figure out what would be the problem of listing that additional case, which got us into the beautiful Klolim of Rebbe Chiya, which was the amazing complexity of how you have to take every one of these arayas into consideration to be able to plug them into every statement in every Mishnah throughout. So then it would mean that the Mishnah of Asur Lazer, Muteres Lazer, has to apply to two sisters, and you can't have both of them applying to Levi's case. And that's why he's crazy, or retarded anyway. And then on that view, we get into this whole question. Are we discussing Plukta or are we not? The different dinim, the shitas of Anusas Aviv, and the fact that Levi, in the end, does issue a different brisa, the Tana Devei Levi, that actually lists 16 women, and that opens up the Pandora's box. That means that he's talking about de'ivs, that people doing things that are not normal types of marriages. If he's opening the door up to Appalachia, we can come up with 17 and we come up with more. So the Gemara ends up explaining why we don't do that. Moving on to Daf Yud Aleph, the question is, what's the din of the Yevama who gets Chalitza from one of the brothers? What is her status vis-a-vis the other brothers? And that leads us to understanding the four cases that we originally had brought up. Tzara Seita, which on Amud Beis becomes the discussion of Mazir Grushasa, because the entire basis of pottering a Tzara Seita would be based on the word Acharei Asher Hutam'a, or the word of Hutam'a by the Dinim of the Seita, which is a Machlokes Rav Yossi Ben Kippur and the Rabbanan, about what is it referring to. Is it referring to the Seita, or is it referring to Ma'aser Grushasa? So then that would mean that the Lashon of Hutama treats her exactly like an Erva. And then we get into the issue on the side of Ein Mikra Yotzi B'dei Pshuta. And that was the beautiful twice we had Rabbi Yosef saying, this has nothing to do with Isser, it has to do with not throwing out something that another person could find to be usable. Why would you throw it out? And that's what the issue was over here. That's Meiboro. That a person should not be Zorek Meiboro when somebody else needs that Meibor. That after we went through Tzaras Seita and Tzaras Machzer Grushasa, we then got on Yud Beis into the issue of Tzaras Mima'enet, which led us to this incredible Gezeira of a Gezeira because of Tzaras Habat. And then we had this new idea that the Isser of Nefila could be Goyim because it says, who made Echad Mehem, and now she's got Zika from two brothers, which we're going to get into far more today and in this coming parak. And Yud Beis Amud Beis, we started talking about Tzaras Ilanis, which led us to the question of contraceptives, which led us to the issue about the end of the Mishnah claiming that your mother-in-law could never have been a Ketana, and the need for giving out contraceptives to children shows that Ketanais could get pregnant. And that was a question on the Mishnah. Why does it say your mother-in-law couldn't have been Mima'enet? And then on Yud Gimel, we get into the relationship between pregnancy, birth, and signs of puberty, which led at the end into a very important question. And that is, what is the moment that creates the iser of the tzara? Is it the fact that they were married together, and from the moment of being married to a yavam together, at that point, they are considered to be a tzoras erva, so that ultimately, if he dies without children, we have to look back at that moment? Or is it only whatever is related at the moment of death? So that would make a nafkamina. What if he divorced her, the erva? Is it only if he divorced her first and then married the tzora? Or even if he was married for 30 years to these two women, if before he died, he divorced the islanders, there's no tzara. So that was the important machlokas about what is gorem, the mapalaz, nisuim arishonim, or mita. And that brought us to the second Mishnah, where we listed the shesh arayot hamurot, which themselves is one of the reasons why Rebbe claimed that Levi's got no brains, because the Shesh Arayot Chamurot say that you can't have your mother falling to you. So why didn't he take that into consideration that we're talking about over here, like Rebbe Yehuda, and that it's us? That brings us to the closing part of the first parak, which was the implications of the Machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel across the board. Questions about the way that we could have different Piskei Halachas, Lotis go to do question of whether you can have different kehilas, or whether it would have to be in different cities, and whether there needs to be a resolution of that machlokas of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. So we spoke about Purim and the Megillah, and then the question about whether Beit Shammai would have actually done according to their psak. Would there be a difference before the Bat Kol or after the Bat Kol? Were they always worried about Lotit Godadu? What's the getter of Lotit Godadu? Is it only in the same Besdin, or is it even in the same city? Then we get on Yodalad Amid Beis to list all of the machlokas and where there would be a psul and iser. And we say that in all of those cases, nonetheless, they were careful either not to do, which we still hadn't determined at that point, or to let the other side know. And then on Tetvav, we discussed Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's idea to get out of the problem by making a takana. And then we started getting into the issue of, did they do Kedivrayim or not, by bringing in the story of Beit Shammai's daughter-in-law and breaking down the roof, and the idea of Shoket Yehu and breaking down the mechitzas so that the two mikvahs would be mixed. And then what the din would be, the implications of the Tzarat Habat, who went ahead and got married to somebody, the question of their children, or Yevamah LaShuk and her children, and the differences, what would Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel do about those circumstances? And that led to the exciting Gemara about Reb Dosi ben Hyrcanus and his little devil of a brother, the Bechor Satan, which we used to explain the concept of mimetic breakdown, just as there's genetic breakdown, so we get to level of mutation. And today we got to more than mutation, but to actual speciation. So we went through the idea of Benos Yerushalayim, Abde Shlomo, yesterday on Tetzayin Amid Beis, the din of the Aseres HaShvatim, and then the din of Nochri Eved Baal Bat Yisrael, Talmud and Arpanya, and finally the Gezeira of Akum L'chol Davar. So that is basically our fast review of the perek. So this time we didn't just say Hadron Halach, we actually did it. Count this as a Hadron Halach, but okay. So that's very sweet. Now,
Rebbe, so if Benny would make this as a separate recording, that might be great. And Moshe Foreman and I would like to now revolve Daf Tag.
You can't play tag with a guy who's not here. Sorry, you'll have to wait for another alternative. Okay, so moving on. As our Capitan had encouraged us, he said, "Find on the Halak Perek." So I listened to the first words of the Capitan. Now I listen to the second words of the Capitan. Let's begin that Halak Perek. Never turned down an opportunity. Ketzad Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. Now it's going to turn out that the main focus that we're going to be getting into now in the Masechet is this concept of Zika. Now, we had raised the element of Zika in the previous part. We talked about whether we can use the pasuk to teach me a din of achot zekukato. And that's when we started talking about two sisters that fell together. And we said, wow, that's a crazy case, because that's Isser Nefila Goram law. We use that as a raya for the islanders, right? Okay. So what we have over here is this concept, again, that we had originally raised in that discussion with Ira, of Zika. So what Bichlal is the meaning of Zika? There's like a very cute story by one of the Gedolim, who was a Talmud of Reb Shimon Shkop. And Reb Shimon Shkop, this is actually something that our Rebbe would have asked over here. So Reb Shimon Shkop was known to be like the deepest thinker. And basically his sefer, nobody reads Kimat because it's not understandable. It's like, it sounds like Kierkegaard. It's like very, very complicated. So he's like one of these incredible deep thinkers, right? And this Talmud, at the time was already a Gadol himself, he walks into the room and he finds his Rebbe is walking back and forth in deep thought. So he says, okay, fine. You know, I'm not going to interrupt him. So he tries to start walking out. So his Rebbe says to him, he says, this is actually from the, he became the Rav of Mekor Chaim afterwards. So he says, it was midnight and it was a dark and stormy night. And there I was by my Rebbe, and I see that he's walking back and forth deep in thought, and I try to sneak out. And he says to me, wait. Don't leave. It's so good that you came now. Could you tell me what the word Zika means? I don't want any lomdas. He says, ich will nicht gen lomdas. Tell me what that word means, darn it. So he points out his Rebbe had spent 50 years writing Sfarim on Zika, right? And this is what he tells me 50 years later. Could you tell me what that word means? So it's actually interesting, right? What does it mean? So in fact, many of the Mefarshim explain that the Lashon of Zika comes from the Azuk, Asur Ba'azikim. So it comes from the word to be caught up in handcuffs, so to speak, in chains. In other words, she is caught by the Yavam. The reason I'm bringing this up is because we need to distinguish the various meanings of the use of Zika. Obviously, Zika is a reality because the Torah created a bond that you're not allowed to break by marrying the Eshet Hameish Shachutza L'Ish Zar. Furthermore, that bond is so powerful that we just learned that Kiddushin, even though normally it's Chal on an Isser Lav, that Kiddushin, at least according to one Shita, isn't even Chal on a Yavam L'Shuk. Now, that is an incredible madrega of connection. I mean, that's almost like an Eshes Ish. So on the one hand, the Zika is undeniable. But on the other hand, we had this whole machlokas about what happens after one of the brothers goes ahead and does Yibum or Chalitza. What happens to the other brothers? So we had the machlokas, Reish Lakish, and Reb Yochanan. Now, the question is, if you say that after the brother does Yibum or Chalitza, all of the other brothers are no longer usher in the Erva. So what that means to say is that the Zika disappears, right? And somehow it no longer will usher anybody from marrying this woman. Now, if Zika were really like marriage, you can't dissolve marriage like that by dying or by doing something, by being megaresh, nothing. So why would the Isurim that come from Zika, why would they suddenly disappear if Zika is a reality? So therefore, on the one hand, we've got a vision of the Torah saying, no, you can go right ahead and sleep with her. She's screaming, wait a minute, I'm not married to him. I don't want it. Too bad, you are married to him. That's like, that is every way you look at it. That seems to be the marriage that the Torah gave you. Ha'isha shenatata imadi. The original marriage, like we spoke about at the beginning of the Masechet. That's why Yavamis comes first, according to the Rambam. Marriage, which is be'achreach, is a completely different level of relationship and defines nashim from its beginning. And yet, on the other hand, it has an expiry date on it. How can marriage have an expiry date on it? So this leads to the machlokas of whether Zika is to be seen as an actual marriage, so long as it is an extant, or whether, no, Zika is just the way in which the Torah binds the Yavama to a Yavam and doesn't want anybody else to get involved. But it's not because of marriage, and it's not because of a real extension of marriage. Now, that's a machlokas that becomes, as we're going to see now, becomes called Yesh Zika or Ein Zika. But do not confuse that with an actual question of whether Zika exists. Of course Zika exists. This is a shorthand of the Gemara. So is there a Zika which is a Zika relationship? That's a binding relationship? Or is there no Zika relationship? And not, that means to say it doesn't reflect marital status. That is what we're going to be discussing. But it's very important to recognize that those are two different confusing terms. So there's the Zika relationship, and then there's the fact of Zika. So now getting to the case of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, because that case is exactly involved in this question of the Heter for Yavama. A brother who wasn't there is unaffected by the original Yibum and Chalitza, and remains, therefore, out of the reach of Zika. So there never was something that was matir, the Eshet Achiv, who died before he was born, to him. So therefore, the Mishnah opens up with a discussion of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo. So what's the case? Well, the case is you got two brothers. One of them dies. And then, this is, remember, our terminology. Reuven and Shimon. Reuven dies. Little baby Levi is born. Then Shimon goes ahead. Shimon then goes and marries Reuven's wife, and now Shimon dies. Now note that this is a limited application, because we're going to see later on that it might be true, we had the machlokas, this might be true even if Levi was born afterwards, after Shimon had already married. That was a machlokas. Whether it's only because of, remember, greeting, welcome to the world, baby Levi. That's the question. Is that fundamentally part of it, the way this Mishnah has it? Or could it even be if Levi was born, and when Levi is born, he finds Shimon married to this woman. Nobody even remembers that Reuven existed. That's not the case here. Here he's born into a situation where he's threatened by the need for Yibam, but we say, don't worry, baby Levi, you don't really need to know about these things at your age. Anyway, you didn't even exist at the time that your brother died. Fine. So then the second brother dies. So the first woman, Harishona, the first woman, what is the first woman exactly? Meaning the first one who, that is to say, the woman that was originally married to Reuven. And we're calling her first because she was the first one to fall to Yibam. So she goes out from this relationship because of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, who remains Asura to Levi. This is very important, our fundamental case, so please pay attention. Very simple case. She is Asur forever because she is still an Eshet Ach Shelo Haya Ba'olamo to him. And there was never anything that was matir her to him because the brother had died before he was born. And now that the brother who did do Yibum, Shimon, is married to another woman, that other woman is married to Shimon together with an Erva, the Erva being Eshet Reuven. And therefore, Hashnia is Yotze Mishum Tzarata. Where does this get us directly into the question of Yesh Zika or Ein Zika? Ah, what happens? And we have other issues here. Remember, we spoke about Ma'amar. Now, Ma'amar is an exacerbation of the Zika problem, because Ma'amar creates a Dirabonan marriage with a Yavama, and it doesn't matter what your opinion is about Zika. This is a new concept that we spoke about, that the Rabbanan say, if you're going to go and take your Yavama, do it nicely. So treat her like any woman, give her a ring and make things nicey-nicey. And that's called kiddushin, so to speak, of a yavama, which is called ma'amar. Does it do anything, midiraisa? Absolutely not. It's meaningless. Why is it meaningless? Because the zika is the only thing that has defined that relationship. So you can't create a Kedushin just like somebody else can't create a Kedushin. You can't really create a Kedushin. But what happens if there's more than one brother? Now, the Zika was originally to both of those brothers or to all 15 of those brothers, right? And now what happens is that one brother goes ahead and he wants to close the door on the other brother. So he goes ahead and he gives Ma'amar. Okay, then that creates an issue, Mirabonin, for any of the other brothers to take her. What happens if there are no other brothers? There's this case. Shimon is the only brother who's supposed to be doing the Yibum. Shimon goes ahead and he says, I'm a really good boy. I'm going to first do Maimer and tomorrow we'll do Yibum. Since only the good die young, Shimon dies that night and never gets to do Yibum. Now baby Levi is faced with a woman who is a Yevama from his first brother and a wife of a second brother who was married, sort of, Drabonan, through Maimer, to an Erva of his. But since Maimer is not a Diraisa, Shimon was never really married to that Erva. But since Mirabonan, she's a Tzoras Erva, this other woman, because after all, Maimer made her into like a Tzoras Erva, so you can't be Miyabim her. But how is she going to be able to marry anybody else, the other wife of Shimon, since she's now stuck? You give her chalitza. Simple. So that would mean that since we haven't really created a tzoras erva, because it's only a drabanan, so then when Shimon dies, choletzet v'lo mityabemet. So then Levi is faced with a real brother of that has a real wife on the one hand, and on the other hand, with a brother who is drabanan married to his eshetachim shelo haya b'olamo, and therefore he can't do yibam, but he does chalitza. So this introduces a number of fascinating concepts, which the Gemara is now going to expand upon. Amar Rav Nachman, by the way, the language of this Mishnah, Meit HaRishona, HaShniya, what is that language? Because I know that there are others who reverse the language over here. So the one whose Lashon in the Mishnah is HaRishona, that's perfectly understandable. The one who calls the Rishona the Shniya, also, it's perfectly understandable, Lo Mishtabesh. I'll explain to you why. If you want to call her HaRishona, okay, then the reason we're calling her Rishona is because my Rishona, Rishona LeNifila. She is the first one who fell to Yibam. She fell to Yibam back when Reuven had died. So that's where we're calling her, the first one. She is the Isser Erva. Rishona LeNifila. But if you want to call her the Shnia, you can call her the Shnia, because we mean Shnia. She was the second one to get married to Shimon, because Shimon only married her after he had been married to his other wife for 30 years. Now, all of a sudden, his brother died, so he married her, you know. Wait a minute, what are you talking about? Why is that? I don't understand. And if he wasn't married to the Tzara for 30 years, if he married the Tzara only the day after he was Meyabim her and then he died, she's not a Tzara Serva. Why are you telling me Shnia? Because she's the second one that he married? No, come off it. That's not true. You're introducing something. You're saying, well, that's what normally happens. And you can't call a case based on what normally happens. I mean, maybe he really had needed to relieve his frustrations of being married to this awful woman because the Torah said he had to marry her by marrying somebody else the next day. I don't know. So that's crazy. I mean, Milo Askinen, what were you telling me? We can't be talking about that first he did Yibam and then he went in and got married to the other woman. That doesn't make sense. So when we say Shnia, we mean the Shnia b'Nisuin. She's the first one, but she's called the second because she's been married twice. She was married to Reuven, and now she's married to Shimon for the second marriage. So we're calling her Ashnia. The second marriage is the actual Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya B'Olamo, and the other one is the Tzora. Fine. Anyway, where do we get the idea of Eshet Achiv Shelo Haya B'Olamo? Bichlal, that's the Gemara. Where does it say it in the Torah? Eicha Ketiva. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, I'll tell you, it's a pasuk in the description of the nature of Yibum. Amar Kra, ki yeshvu achim yachdav. These women, umeis achad b'yam. These brothers are together. What do you mean together? They have to be living in the same city, in the same house. What's together? Together means in the same world. They had to have a yeshiva achad ba'olam. And if they never shared this world, because one was dead by the time the other one was born, then they were never contemporaries. It's simply the word for the English contemporary. So if contemporary brothers, one of them dies. So by definition, that excludes a non-contemporary brother who is little baby Levi, who was born after this great tragedy in his family. So prat la'eshet achiv shelo haya ba'olamo. Yachtov also means miyuchadim benachala. They have to be the type of brothers that share an inheritance. What type of brothers share an inheritance? Only brothers from a common father. But this excludes achiv min ha'em. Rabbi says, you don't need the idea of Yachtov in the sense of miyuchadim benachala. We know that it could only be brothers from the same father because I learned that out from Gzeres Shava. Achva, achva. Does it not say the idea of achim, keshu achim? And do not the brothers of Yosef say, shneim asar anachnu achim b'nei avinu? And they say b'nei avinu. Exactly, because they had different mothers. So, just like by the age, the brothers of Yaakov, they are defined as paternal brothers and not maternal brothers. So that's the same idea. Wait a minute, says the Gemara to Rabbah. Achva, the word Achva appears in the Parsha of Arias many times. And over there, we learn out that it specifically does not mean only a brother from the same father. We learn out from the pasuk, it means even your mother. So why not learn from there? No, because over there in the Parsha of Arias, it says achicha. We're trying to learn the word from the word achim directly. Shnei masar achim, ki yeshvu achim, neat, clean. Don't start bothering with me achicha over there, eshet achicha. So that's not nogea. So danim achim meachim ve'danim achim achicha. And you all know what the next question is. Even though Naftali's not in the chair, he knows what the next question is. And that is, who cares? What about the Tana Deve? I know you're there. What about the Tana Deve Yishmael, who with the famous drasha? One pasuk in the Parsha of Metzaras Habatim says Veshava Kohen, and another pasuk says Uboha Kohen. And from there we learn that you need netitza with both of them because Zoe Shiva, Zoe Bia, and therefore the Gzera Shava. Whatever is the din in one is the din in the other. Shav and Ba sound a lot different to me than Achicha and Achim. So what are you giving me this neat Achim business? And we know what the answer is. That hani mila yechad elecha mida de damile avo yechad yikam mida de damile mida damile yafin. And we always go for the cleanest Gzeres Shava. That's the point. So even though, remember, even though Gzeres Shava is learned and it's only b'kabbalah, it's only the word that you're given in the Gzeres Shava. We see this all over. You have to determine the matchup by looking at the afnuyes and at the exact grammatical construct and so on and so forth. So that's the issue over here. The neatest application is achim, achim, shnei masar achim.
But Rebbe, in ancient Greek, veshav uba is the exact same word, and you only know the difference by context.
So what did the Targum of the Shivim do with this, huh? Okay, ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. Doesn't Lot say, ki anashim achim anachu? It's the same word, ki yeshu achim. So then why wouldn't there be a din of needing to do yibum on your father's brother's wife if he dies? We can learn that out from Lot, right? And there you have the same thing. Well, it's more reasonable. We should learn out from Bnei Yaakov because over there, it's completely, what do we need to say it for? It should have just said, Shnei Masar Avadecha, Bnei Avinu. All that they're trying to discuss is the fact that they have the same father and they add the word Shnei Masar Achim. So that must be to teach us that we mean Achim from fathers. And the truth is we need both Achim and Yachtov. Why? They seem to be saying the same thing. No, no. Let's say it would have Achim. I would have said, okay, Achim, I could still expand to include Lot as well. I wouldn't limit it, obviously, but why not expand it through Lot? And if you'll tell me, Lot, that's not Mufna the way this is. It is, because since the idea of the expansion would be to include this other concept, what are you saying? That, no, over there, it's not Mufna, and therefore what? And therefore, it's just a way to say friends, right? We're friendly. I mean, that's a word that's always used. Shimu achai ve'ami. I mean, everybody's brother. We're members of the same ideas. So maybe that's all that it means there. So how can you learn out over there that it's literally genealogy? No, because if it was only coming, the Achim by Lot, this is how the Rambam understands it. If Lot was only coming to tell you that this is we're friends, but not to tell me the din of genealogy, then in order to avoid this problem of the connection to the genealogy of Achim Yachtov, the Torah should have said Re'im Anachtov. Instead, it says Achim Anachtov. That means it's meant to extend the concept of Achim. That's what I would have thought. That's why I'd have to say Yachtov, to say that they're miyuchadim b'nachala. So even though, this is very important to note, even though Lamaisa, they could actually be miyuchadim b'nachala, because they could share Terach's nachala. Because since Haran had died, right? So who was going to be Yorishim? Lot. And who was the other Yorish? Avram. So then they are miyuchadim b'nachala. That's why Rashi says Yachtov means Nachala Achat. They're not both sharing directly Terach. Actually, Lot is inheriting his deceased father, Haran. That's not Nachala Achat, despite the fact that they share the money. But it's not coming from the same inheritance, you see. Therefore, Rashi was bedeit to say Nachala Achat. Beautiful. Okay, so that means that we need to have both of these. And let's say it would have just said Yachdav, not talking about the Achim from Ibn Yaakov. I might have thought maybe you need complete togetherness in order to be Machai of Yibam, because Yibam is about genetics. So what do you mean you're going to restore the genetics? For God's sake, you're half a different gene. You have a different mother. So that's not called restoring to the family. So you would have thought to restore to the family, you have to share a full set of chromosomes. And therefore, we would want you to be maybe only twins. Okay, can't be twins. All right. But at least you should have the same father and mother. Therefore, I need to know, no. It's enough to have the same father. Why would I have thought this? So why would I have thought that you would have the same mother also? Isn't Yibum related to Nachala? Because it says Beferish, Yakum al Shemach Ivamet, and that means that he gets the Nachala. So that doesn't have anything to do with a mother. Nachala is entirely Mina'av and not Mina'im. No, because I would have thought that since Yibum is this incredible Chiddush, that the Torah wants you to be over on an Erva in order to deal with the genealogical problem of what do we do about his genes. So if the Torah is being Matir, an erva, it would have to be fully shared genes. And therefore, ema adam yachde be'aba ube'ima. Therefore, I say, we have to have both of these issues. So we had managed to go through this whole concept of achim and what the meaning was of the ach shlohoya ba'olama. And we were going to use this case. The Mishnah introduces the perek with this case in order for us to actually examine the interrelationship between the Achim, which is going to be defined by a strange thing, the presence of a Yavama, where the actual presence of a Yavama in a family of Achim creates a situation of Isurim, as we've seen, there's a possibility of Achot Zkukato. The Zika on the Ach creates an Isur of Achiv Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, to a brother that's born afterwards. And it introduced the concept of the implications of Ma'amar and how Ma'amar can be more than just a plain Zika. And Ma'amar can be similar to a Kiddushin, at least in the sense that it will make it usser to do Yibum to a Tzara. And it will be Mechayev you in doing Chalitza specifically, because it was as if she was married to the other Ach. So now today we want to get into the intricacies of these relationships. What is the meaning of having a relationship that is neither here nor there? You're supposedly already married to her in a sense, because the Torah says she can't get married to anybody else. And not only that, even if somebody else would give her Kiddushin, the Kiddushin wouldn't be Chal. If you hold that Kiddushin is not Chal and the Yavah lo tihiyeh, Eshet HaMeit HaChutzah means lo tiyeh. There is no Havaya for Eshet HaMeit HaChutzah. So on the one hand, we're viewing her as being married, and yet that is mechayev yibum. So now there's a very simple way, you would think, to test the hypothesis. Because what would be the din of a woman who was zikuka to one of the brothers? And then what happened is that the woman died. So the Yavama died. So there never was a Yibum. Now, this guy, the brother that never had any relationship to her, wants to marry her mother. Was he married to her before she died? Even though he never even looked at her, he never even, you know, she was in Australia and he's sitting there over there in Walnut Creek. I mean, should we say that they're it's as if they're married and therefore he can never marry the mother because of Zika? Or is no, Zika is just a relationship to doing the mitzvah of Yibum, but it's not as if you're actually married. So here is where we raise the question for the first time, and that is in Omer Avuna Omer Rav, Shomeret Yavam Shemeta. So this is our question. I can't believe it. It did it again. Naftali, I think you're going to have to come and visit. That's the only solution. And then I'll hand you over my iPad like it was in the first time that I ever saw an iPad, which was in your house. You presented me with my first iPad. And then you'll fix things for me. I'm ready for your presence. I'll get your bed ready. All right, thanks. So Omer Avuna Omer Rav, Shomeret Yavam Shemeta. So we're above one-third up of the way on the daf. So between the half and one-third mark. Omer Avuna Omer Rav, Shomeret Yavam Shemeta, Mutar Be'ima. So here is the big question that I just raised. This woman dies before she ever gets the Yibum, and now the Yavam would like to marry her mother. Can he or not? He says, yes, absolutely. So what does that show you? That Ravuna holds Ein Zika. Now, remember, we explained that the usage of the word Ein Zika doesn't mean there's no Zika. That's ridiculous. Then why is the Yavama Asura Lashuk? It means the Zika, there's no concept of an Ishut called Zika. And that Zika does not create a relationship which is similar to marriage, even though it creates the Isurim Legabe the Din of Yibum, that are similar to marriage. That is, that vis-a-vis the halacha of Yibum, this woman is considered to be asura to anybody else but the Yavam. But that is a unique set of dinim of Yibum that has no implications for the overall structure of marriage and arayas. That's what Ein Zika means. Not that there is no Zika midi arayasa on the Isha to be mityabemet. Now, this because of that, it means that the question of Ein Zika is actually a profound issue in how do we understand the interrelationship of Yibum and Erva in its overall meaning and implications throughout the Masechet. If we can isolate the particular relationship of Yibum from all other types of relationship of marriage. So that means that it's a sort of unique kind of relationship that doesn't fit in to the overall structure of the relationships with women, which is defined by Kiddushin and by Nisuin in the Torah. So this really has very profound implications, conceptual implications about the nature of Yibum. Can we isolate the dinim of Yibum from the overall dinim of Ishus? So that would mean that according to Rav Huna, if a person is married to a woman and the woman dies, he can never marry her mother. There's only one person that he can marry who was once related to his wife, his wife's sister. And that, of course, is the whole interface from the beginning of the Masechet with Yibum, because it's the only other place where an Erva suddenly becomes Mutter. And therefore, again, it was not coincidental that it's from there that we learn out Litzror and all the Dinim of Tzoras and Aleha and so on. That was the profound insight that we had at the beginning of the Masechet, that that's why we build the entire din off of Achot Isha. So therefore, let's look at the difference between the Achot Isha in this and in the Ima. You can hold Ein Zika, and if you hold Ein Zika, then you would be mater even the mother. But if you hold Yesh Zika and the Yavama dies, the only one you would be mutter in would be the sister, because then even if she were considered to be a wife, the death of a wife is mater the sister. Right? Fine. That's going to be very important in just a moment. Now, the question is, if Rav Huna, this is a very sneaky way for us to introduce so many of the intricacies of Zika, why doesn't Rav Huna just say, Esther Gemara? Again, it's a multi-level question. Why doesn't Rav Huna just say, Halacha Kedivrei HaOmer Ein Zika? Look, I mean, that's basically what he's saying, right? If he would have held that Zika was like marriage, it would have been Aser. So therefore, it's got to be that he holds that there is a halacha that ain't Zika. Now, we know that there is, in fact, a very important Mishnah that spoke about ain't Zika. This is a Mishnah that we talked about before. And that is going to be the question. If one of the Yavamas, one of the potential Miyabim, goes ahead and he does a regular Kedushin with the sister of the Yavama. So now the question is, what is the relationship to that sister? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera says, we tell that guy, now hold on a minute. You want to marry this girl, you gave her Kedushin, do not sleep with her. Don't consummate this marriage until one of your brothers does either Yibum or Chalitza. But until that time, you mustn't take her because she will be Achot Zekukatcha. And then after one of the brothers does the Yibum or does the Chalitza, he will be Mevatel, the Zika, to you. And at that moment, you will become Muteret to the sister. Now, what does that mean? It means that Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera holds that Zika to one woman, you asers you in relationships to her sister. So then, according to that, we should simply have said, Halacha Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera, because that's his shita, that yesh Zika, and the brother can't take the sister of, even though there's 20 brothers. He's saying, what are you looking at me for, man? I'm the youngest one in the family. I always wanted to marry this little girl. You know, she's 20 years younger than this woman who died. Get off my case. The older brother's going to be taking care of it. I mean, you could just imagine the situation when you're telling me I can't marry her because theoretically brother number 20 could end up being young. I have no intent of being Miyabim. None of the brothers would allow me to be Miyabim. I'm just a kid brother. Leave me alone. No, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera. You are married in a sense to this girl's sister, because you're a potential Yavam, and a potential Yavam is Zakuk, and Zakika gives you a din of being married to her. Now, if we can remove that Zika, then we can start talking about you're taking this woman. How are you going to remove the Zika? Well, tell your brother to get a move on already. Let him do Yibum or let her do Chalitza. You see, you got 20 brothers, so can one of them get a move on a little bit? What's your big problem? So you can just see this thing translated into real life, very simple. So all Rav Huna had to say is that that's the halacha, because Shmuel over there paskins that that's the halacha, as we're going to see later. So just paskin like that. No, because if he would have said just that, what would I have thought? I would have thought, wait a minute. There's obviously a difference where there's 20 brothers, or for that matter, two brothers, or where there's only one brother, right? I mean, if there's one brother, then the Torah has defined him as related to this woman until he does Yibum or he does Chalitza. If there's more than one brother, so you would say, okay, so one brother can opt out. How does he opt out? By marrying the sister. If he marries the sister, he's obviously not going to be able to do Yibum because then she's going to be a Surah Lav as an Erva, right? It's Achot Ishto. So if I just paskin and I say the words, Halacha Kedivrei HaOmer Ein Zika. You might have thought that that means in this case, because there's 20 brothers, right? Fine. So there's no Zika because there's no particular relationship to any one of these Yevamot. But in a case where there would be only one brother, which was the case that Rav Huna was talking about, there's one brother who's in love with the mother of his Yevama, one surviving brother. And then she dies. Maybe in that case, The halakha would have been that, yeah, in that case, there may be Zika that would asur the mother forever. So I can't just say, Rav Huna says, I can't just say halakha kedivrei haomer, because then people would think that I'm implying for this particular case where you're the only brother and therefore the mother remains asur on that brother. But maybe in the case of one brother, that's unique. Okay, fine. So let Rav Huna say, Halacha kedivrei haomer ein zika afilu b'chat. That's all you need to say. You want to clarify that it even works in this case about the mother, so say so. Wow, the halacha is like Rabbi Yudim and Batera, and do not think that that's only because there's one brother. Because, no, there's two brothers. Because it's true even if there would only be one brother. And I'm giving you the case. There's one brother wants to marry the mother. He's never allowed to marry the mother again. How do you like that? Even though the Yavama died. Because if he would have said that, I would have thought, Hava Amina, I would have thought that the Yavam can marry the idea of filo, if you're going to tell me that ein zika afilo b'chad, so that afterwards Rav Huna says he's allowed to marry the mother. So if I would have said ein zika, like the Mandiyama who goes against this Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera, because we're assuming that there's such a Mandiyama, even though Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera said that. So now I would have thought that this would mean that there's no zika at all. Meaning, there's b'chlal no concept of zika to aser him, and therefore, even while she didn't die, she's alive, he should be able to go ahead and to marry the mother, because ein zika, you're telling me ein zika afilu b'chad. Ein zika afilu b'chad means, okay, you can go ahead and marry her mother. You're not married to her. No, wait a minute. Zika does create isurim on the mother while she's still alive. B'chayim lo. But if she dies, then we would say ein zika. But the problem is that it's not really because of zika, because that would be inconsistent. I don't hold of zika. So then why is it usher? Because there's another issue here. If he would go and marry the mother, would he be able to ever do the yibum? No, because you're not allowed to marry a woman and her mother, right? So therefore, by marrying the mother, you're going to end up being mevatel, the mitzvah of Yibum. That's a different issue. That has nothing to do with Zika. So stop confusing me over here. Let's take the steps. We know that there's a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera and let's call him the Rabbanan. All Rabbi Rav Huna needs to say is, listen, we don't paskin like that Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera. He says that it's usher. I say that ain zika, and it's mutter to marry the mother. So why can't you just say that? Because if you just would have said ain zika, I would have thought ain zika in the case of Rabbi Yehuda ben Batera. We don't pasuk like that because there's 20 brothers, and this brother is right. There's so many brothers. Leave me alone. Okay, over there, ain zika. But if there would only be one, then I would say yay zika. So why not just say ain zika under any circumstances? Because then you would have thought that that means, let's say, don't talk about the case. Don't talk about the mother. Don't make things complicated. Just say there's no zika ever, even if there's only one brother, because you would think that if that's the case, you were allowed to marry the mother. Why? Because I said ain't zika. Ain't zika means you're not married to this mother's daughter, even though she's your yavama. That's what you would have thought. But I need to tell you that that's not true, not because of zika, but that the only time you can marry that mother was if the Yavama died. Because if the Yavama didn't die, tell me something. Who's going to do Yibum? If you go ahead and you marry the mother, so then she's going to be an Erva on you. So you can't do the Yibum. You can't do the Chalitza. So you're going to be totally Mavato the Mitzvah. You have no right to be the Mavato the Mitzvah from yourself. That's why I need to discuss this case. But in terms of the theory, I hold Ein Zika at all. And theoretically, you could marry the mother, even if the Yavama is alive. So this is the maximal position of Ein Zika, but it introduces a new concept, which we're going to see if it relates in any way to Zika, and that is Oser Levato Mitzvat Yavmin. So let's keep those two ideas in mind. Fine. So therefore, it's only if she dies, that is when you can be allowed. Now, the problem is that Rav Huna does not make sense in terms of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if somebody's Yavama dies, he's allowed to marry her sister. Well, obviously he's allowed to marry her sister. Even if he was married to this Yavama and his wife died, he'd be allowed to marry his sister, right? So what the Mishnah seems to be saying is, you're only allowed to marry your sister, but you're not allowed to marry your mother, because otherwise, why in the world would the Mishnah be discussing what the din is of a sister would be true even if you were totally married to her? Forget about Zika. You're totally married to a woman. The woman dies, the husband becomes mutter and the sister. So if you're discussing sisters, it's because that's the only case where a yibum, where a erva becomes muteret. That's the pshat. But to her mother, if you were even zokuk to the mother, to the daughter, the mother is us, right? That's beferish a mishnah like not like Rav Huna. No, says the Gemara, that's not what the mishnah means. You're making a diak in the mishnah, which is inappropriate. Who had the nefila be'ima? The truth is that since this is based on the concept of Zika or Ein Zika, there's no Zika. So therefore, you could marry even the mother. And the reason that it says here, the Badafka, the sister, is because the first part of this Mishnah introduces the concept of Achot Ishto. So the Mishnah there said, Ishto Shemeta, Mutar Ba'achota. And there it really means, obviously, you're only mutter b'achotah. You're certainly not mutter in any of the other relatives because achot isha is a unique situation, the only situation in the entire Torah, except for yibum, which shares that unique idea of the erva changing status because of a change in the life of the one who made it an erva. Either the brother, where change in his life makes it a mitzvah to take the woman who was previously an erva, or a sister. It's the exact case. One is the brother, wife, and one is the wife, sister. Exact same case. Remember, that's the beautiful parallel with Achot Isha, where if the wife dies, who is the one who made it usher, then it's not a mitzvah to take her sister, but it is certainly mutter to take the sister. And by the way, there are many cases where people marry a sister because it's like a mitzvah. We found cases like this. I talked to you about the Zilberman, exactly the same case. Sister was killed in the pigua, went immediately to marry her sister in order to take care of the children. Very similar to the concept of yibum. And this we find other cases in the Gemara like this. It's a very common situation. Who's going to take care of the kids? He's got 12 yesemim in the house. Who's going to take care of the kids except for her own sister? My wife's grandfather did the same thing. Married the sister of his wife when she died.
The Goldsteins here in the Rova. She was killed in the car accident.
Yeah, it's a very, very common situation, and really for the same psychological issues as yibum, in a sense. It's to be a maimed shema mesa, and over there it's to be a maimed shema mesa, so to speak, on her children. So it's incredible that these two things were set up lechatchila in the Torah as being those examples of the unique arayas that are related to the concept of Aleah and to the concept of Litzror. Now, as the Masechet develops here, you begin to see more and more how powerful that is, because that's what the whole Mishnah was doing. It starts off talking about the din of Achot Isha, and she dies, so you're Osir Be'ima, but you're Mutter Be'achosa, and then goes on to explain it in the context of Yibon. And what would be in the same context where there's a sister to the Avama, and the Yavama dies, so then you would be Mutter Ba'achotah. Exactly. So that's what the Mishnah is trying to show you. But you don't have a right to be Medayik from that Mishnah. Okay. So you see, it's only Achotah, but not the mother. No, says Rav Huna, it means the mother too. But it's not talking about that. It's trying to frame the issue of Yibum in the context of the Isra of Achot Isha. That's all, and that makes a heck of a lot of sense. But don't make false diukim about the truth is, what's the halacha based on? Ein Zika. That's what it's based on. And because of that, you could have married the mother as well. So therefore, since it begins, Eidet Tana Resha Ishto Shemeta Mutar Ba'achota, we're over there, it obviously means only Ba'achota. Ba'achota in, but Be'ima lo. I mean, that's an issue to arise in the Farsha and the Pasuk. Tananami Seifa, Mutar Bachota, in terms of Zika. But the truth is, it would have been completely mutter. Now, Rav Yehuda says, Shomeret Yavam Shemeta, Asur Be'ima. Not true. Absolutely wrong, Rav Huna. If a Shomeret Yavam dies, where over there the woman dies, then he's never allowed to marry the mother again. Why? Amar Kasava, Yesh Zika. So here is the classic machlokes, Rav Huna versus Rav Yehuda. Can you marry the mother? Can you not marry the mother? That's all. Yesh Zika, Ein Zika. Apparently, Rav Yehuda holds Yesh Zika, and this Yavam will never be able to marry the mother. So why not? We ask the same question in reverse. Why not simply say that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda ben Becerra? Why not say the halacha is like the Mandi Amar Yesh Zika? Ah, because if I had said that, you would have thought, yo, the halacha is like the Man D'Omar, yesh zika, only if there's one brother. But what if there were two brothers? So then, since there's no defined brother that has to do the yibum, so maybe over there ain't zika. That's why I want to tell you that in terms of the mother, where over there it would be true, even where there would be more than one yavam. It's osir forever. That's ridiculous. That's utterly ridiculous. The machlokas about whether yesh zika or ain't zika is in what case, gentlemen? Where did Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra say it? Where there are 20 brothers. And we tell the guy who wants to marry the sister, we say, do not consummate this marriage until one of your brothers goes ahead and does yibum. That was the case we were talking about, where the guy's yelling, what do I have to do with this? I live in Walnut Creek. Go talk to the brothers in Australia. Right? That's exactly the case. If you paskin like the Man D'Omar, who says in that case that the halacha is yesh zika, then that means you are saying yesh zika. How could you say? I would have thought that it's only where there's one brother. The case was where there were 20 brothers. So v'haki pligi betray pligi. The case given where the machlokas appears is in a case where there's more than one brother. Okay, sorry, you're right. But I'll tell you why he couldn't have said stop. That the halacha is like the Man D'Omar holds yesh zika. It's if he would have said that, let's say he would have just said, halacha, Man D'Omar, yesh zika. So e omar hachi, if he would have said that, I would have thought that that means, yes, yesh zika, so long as they are alive. So if the Yavama is alive, then there's zika. But the moment that she dies, Pokala Zika. There the Zika disappears, and therefore she's no longer married to him. And at that moment, it would be Muteret. Kamashmalan. Now, therefore, we learn from there, this is an extremely subtle argument, so we need to concentrate on what he's saying. Kamashmalan de Zika bichdi lo paka. A very important concept. Please keep this concept in mind. Zika, but keep all of the new ideas we've been talking about. Asur levato mitzvahs yabim. Write that down. Write down the issue of Zika betray or Zika bechat. And write down this idea. Write down ma'amar, of course. And write down this idea, Zika bichdi lo paka. So now, what we've introduced over here is a very strange issue. If on the one hand you're telling me yesh Zika, then how can you tell me that if it would be yezika, there's going to be a difference between le'achar misa and before? Isn't the meaning of yezika, doesn't that mean by definition that she is as if she's married? I mean, there would be no difference on a marriage. So if Rav Yehuda would have said there is a din of zika, so then how could I have thought, he's saying, I can't say there is a din of zika. I need to define it in terms of the actual case of who it is you'd be allowed to marry. Because if I had said there's zika, you would have mistaken me for saying there is zika while the Yavama is alive. And that asers you on all of her relatives, and you can't marry the mother. But somehow or other, even if there would be yesh zika, that zika would disappear with death. How could that be? Doesn't yesh zika by definition mean that it's as if you were married? And if you were married, so what happens over here? That you went, first of all, ask yourself, you went ahead and removed the zika. So how do you remove the zika? If you would do chalitza, so why is the mother still usher? And how can you say that if you hold yesh zika, that it would be muteres after the death of the woman, where it's exactly the same, it should be the same as the wife herself who dies, and then there would be absolutely not. You can never get married. So it doesn't make any sense. How could there be a zika that then is not a zika because of that? So this whole issue is a very profound insight into the nature of Zika itself. Because what we're saying is, I mean, You're telling me wait until the brother does something because of Zika. And if the brother does something, what happens? What changed? Why is it that if you divorce a woman, the divorce doesn't change anything? So if you remove the Zika through Chalitza, isn't that like a divorce? You remove the Zika, another brother. This guy says, let my other brother. Okay, fine, says Rabbi Yehuda ben Sarah. Let the other brother go ahead and do Chalitza. So he goes and does Chalitza. Then we say to him, now you can go ahead and you can marry Achot Zkukatcha, who's still alive. Why? Because your brother did Chalitza. And if he had divorced her and it was a wife, that would have changed the situation. If you're claiming that I was Zkuka, what good is my brother's Chalitza? It's more than my giving a divorce. The whole thing is very strange. So the same way that a divorce would not relinquish anything about the Achot Zkukato, and death, Ishto, I mean, and death wouldn't change anything when it comes to the mother, Techamoto. So how can you, with one side of your mouth, say, Yesh Zika, and on the other side of your mouth, say that it is possible to actually remove that Zika with Chalitza, and then say the most insane contradiction? If the brother goes ahead and does Chalitza, then the fact that you were once the Zekuka to this woman's sister doesn't asser you. But if the woman actually dies, then it does asser you. What? How does that make sense? So when he says the word Zika bichdi lo pak'a, Zika doesn't just disappear because a woman dies. You have to remove it. How do you remove it? By giving Chalitza. That's better than her dying? That doesn't make any sense in terms of how you understand Zika. So something is very, very strange about this entire halacha, right? So what we need to do in order to get some level of understanding, we need to understand that if you're telling me Zika Bechti Lo Pak, on the one hand, you're saying that if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, Yesh Zika, it makes absolutely no difference if the Yavama is alive or dead. She's always going to have all her Krovim Usser on the Yavam that came through the Ishus forever. And yet, on the other hand, if you're Chaylech Liyavimto, so then all of the brothers are allowed to marry all of the Krovim, even though they were all Zekukim, they were all part of the potential of Yavams. So then why are they not also forever because of Zika? The mother, the sister, the granddaughter, whatever, they're always Usser. And as far as the Achuta, to remain Usser, if she's alive, there still would be Usser, because I mean, if she had been divorced, married and divorced, the husband would still be Usser, and they're all Zekukim, and she's alive, so it'd still be Usser. And yet Chalitza is better than death? I mean, what does that mean? What's the understanding of it? So now, you could think it's important to work this out because it works into the entire discussion we've had until now about the relationship of what happens after one of the brothers goes ahead and does Yibum or Chalitza, what happens to the status of the relationship to the other brothers, right? Now, remember that Reish Lakish says that the other brothers, if they will go ahead and marry the chalutza of their brothers, they are still going to be chayev kores. So then you could say that that means, according to Reish Lakish, that what Zika does is it tells you that the brother that ultimately is the yavam was always Zekuka. But those brothers who never have anything to do with the Yavama, they are what they always were. And therefore, they are always going to be mutter. Because now it turns out that Zika was not for them. It's like the Sfara of Breira, except that it's explaining it in terms of the nature of Zika. So according to Reish Lakish, we don't say, well, the moment that your brother died, now there's no Isser of Eishes Ach, if you're a potential Yavama. We don't say that. Because even though it's true, it's only temporarily true. Because at the end of the story, if brother B goes ahead or brother X goes ahead and does the Yibum or the Chalitza, then all the other brothers are exactly the same as they always were. They're just as Usser as they always were. What happened to the Zika? How come the Zika didn't take off the Isser? Apparently, according to Reish Lakish, you could say because the meaning of Zika is defined as the relationship that always existed to the one that ended up being the Choletz or Miyab. Fine, that you can say. But if you hold according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can't say that, because according to Rabbi Yochanan, the din is that the brothers are all mutter. There's an Isser to Rabbanu, whatever, not to marry her. But she's not considered to be a brother's wife any longer. Why? Because at the moment that the brother died, all 20 brothers were potential Yavams, and therefore they were all Zokuk. So Zekika removed the Isser of Eshes Ach. And therefore you can't say that it's retroactively, it is now defined as not having had anything to do with the other brothers, because it obviously does. All the brothers are mutter. So how are you going to explain this crazy idea of the Zika being there yet not being there? It's like very, very strange. So these words end up being opening up the Pandora's box of the inherent contradictions of the nature of Zika. Those words, Zika, Bichdi, Lo Poka, even with death, are simply beyond belief. So what we could say is that the Chalitza is actually Oker the Zika. That could be the pshat. So in other words, until that moment, there was Zika. And the moment that you take off the Zika by an act of Yibum or Chalitza, you uproot the Zika. What's the din when a Chacham is Matir a Neder? He uproots the Neder and he takes off the Neder that was there the whole time. So during the period where the Neder is there, it's not as if the Neder doesn't exist. It's just that now the way that he takes off the Isser is by being Oker that Isser. So some of the Achronim try to explain it in that way. And therefore, there would be, on the one hand, the brothers are mutter, because the chalitza was oker the zika, but there is no longer an issacharis, because during the time that there was the zika, it took off the isser from all of the brothers. But nonetheless, it means that you need to remove zika, and that zika is not a function of the woman's being there and demanding Yibum, because even if she's dead, the relationship has not changed. Zika continues. Zika bichdilo poka. That Zika continues onward. So now what's left to understand is that if that's the case, so then why in the world is it that it's possible to actually, having been Zakuk, that now it's mutter to marry if there is. They're telling me there is, we thought that even though there is Zika, that it would be mutter after the death of the Zakuka to get married, even though you hold Yesh Zika. That's what Rabbi Yehuda said. If I would have said Yesh Zika, you would have thought that that's the case, right? So what we need to say is an additional refinement of this concept. And that is that marriage is meant to be a defined state forever until dissolved. Zika is meant to be an expiry date. That's the whole point of the Zika. I exist to make sure that Yibum or Chalitza will take place. So the nature of the relationship is that it will expire when it is consummated through Yibum or Chalitza. Whereas marriage, the nature of marriage is that when it's consummated, it's permanent. So therefore, even though Zika would give you the dinim of marriage, but it's marriage that is built in expiration. That's the point. So you have this incredible sense of the contradiction of what Zika is as it is and what Zika leaves behind it when it disappears. But does it disappear just because of death? No. What took it off? The expiry date was not death. Death is only an expiry date for marriage. But that's because we learn out that whole halacha from the pasuk, what the din is after the death of a husband, what the din is of a woman, that she's completely muteris, and that misa is matir, as we're going to get to in the Seches Kedushin. We're going to understand where we learn that from. But the idea that Zika should go away with death, Tainus Rebuta, why do you assume that? You see all of the assumptions that we need to drop, because on the surface, it seems that's crazy. How could chalitza be more powerful than death? It's nuts. What dissolves a relationship more than death, right? That's exactly what Ruth says to Naomi. Hamavet Yafrid. What's this amavet? Yeah, Fried ben Yila ben Eir. Okay, so that's exactly the point. This is, in fact, the nature of a relationship that death is irrelevant to, because it's the nature of the defined mitzvah, and that was never removed. Okay, so this is a tremendous chidushim here in just a couple of words that Rav Yehuda put forth.
Lema misogia. That word the Rebbe just said, death is irrelevant, I find fascinating, because that what I'm doing is, despite the fact that somebody died, they're going to live on. The whole concept is life will go on despite death. It's mamish.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, beautiful. Okay, lema misayayale. Now, do we have a raya later on from the Mishnah that we used as a raya against Rav Huna, who argued with Rav Yehuda? Can we use that Mishnah as a raya to Rav Yehuda? Because it says over there that if a Yavama dies, you're allowed to marry the sister. But that's only the sister, apparently, but not the mother. Why not the mother? Must be because Yesh Zika, exactly like Rav Yehuda. And we answer it the same way. Hu adin dafilu bima. But Aide de Tana Reish, as we explained earlier, that Ishto Shemeta Mutar Bachota, and over there it's Dafka Bachota, but not Be'ima, because that's an issue of the Raisa. Tanya Nami Seifa Mat Mutar Bachota. Beautiful.